Just do me a favor. If 5 years from now I was right, you tell me. All right? Thank you.
If we're still speaking.
Jeez, he's such a... See, even then, he's nasty. Yeah. Maybe I'll stop talking to you.
Yeah, I'll stop talking. Well, I don't threaten people.
No, and what's so great about it is that if I met you in person, you wouldn't have the balls to come up and say that to me. Because I'd sock you in the fucking head. And probably deck you.
When I was a little kid, yeah, he just slowed it down. When I was a little kid, my dad would take me to ball games. I would sit there with my hands over my head. I was so scared of getting hit by a ball.
I was going to look for a Nikki Hilton. Wait, but you see, those good-looking rich girls, they don't go for a guy like me because they don't need my money.
It's my mind, not my penis. That I have to train.
Yeah, I'm working on training my penis. That's where I've been going wrong. That's why I lost half my money. I can't believe my penis. Train the mind.
Homo. And all you do is mooch off of people. You do nothing. You're a big homo.
That's not entirely true.
What do you do?
I'm bisexual and I don't mooch off everybody.
The single best thing about going out with Howard is that we get courtside seats to the Knicks game.
Yeah, we loved it.
Damn!
When did you have your interviews? During the day?
How am I supposed to find a new job? Send out smoke signals?
See how anybody would leave that job at Bedford Loss. And the one thing I don't respond well to is humiliation. I don't respond well to it at all. You know, I want to be told what a shithead I am. And you know, those days are over. I've suffered enough in this business. I don't need to find out what a shithead I am.
But look at your hair. I mean, every curl was manufactured. It's terrific. And you're a radio guy. You're not even on TV.
I am on TV. I'm on demand. And I was on E! For 11 years. Yeah. That's the number one show on E! For
it was exciting. You right. And John Rivers, I couldn't get enough of that.
I mean, Gary's got a wife and kids. And if I leave, who the fuck is going to hire him?
Just help me out. Turn out the light so I don't have to pay the electric bill every minute. It makes me sick.
The hair is real, and I don't color.
Don't get too frisky.
I mean, if I was to give it a good yank, you wouldn't know.
No, it wouldn't all fall out. No, I have my own hair.
And you dye it, obviously.
I do not color it. As you can see, I have some gray in it, but no, I'm very blessed. My grandfather.
Look me in the eye, repeat.
I swear on a stack of Bibles that I don't color.
It's that 3 months into this relationship that you told him, Howard, this relationship is all about you.
Oh, I think I knew that from day one, but I'm okay with it. It's all about him, Ed. We watch TV what he wants to watch. We eat. We wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning. We go to bed at 8. I love it, though. It's my life.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to QF, a podcast about Howard Stern. I'm your host, Phil Moore, a.k.a. Jim Fix, and with me back again in the saddle for part two of Bowie Radley is Mr. Jay Santi, host of Turnbuckle Tabloid. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. This week I'm going as the only true Puerto Rican in the Stern universe because I am so annoyed with these fake Puerto Ricans out there. You know who you are. You know who you are, Papi. I know you know who you are.
he's wearing right now. You guys can't see it, but he's got a tribute to David Patrick Kelly and you know, I'm trying to think who else. Who's this guy's name? What was the guy's name? He was also in Injustice for All. He plays the Fox. He gets killed early in the Warriors. What's that?
I was going with just a Walter Hill, just the showing of gratitude to his achievements. And that was one of the hints that I gave to one of my coworkers. I was like, Walter Hill directed 48 Hours, had actors from one to another. He liked to use the same actors. And it's like, no, I don't get it. No, I'm like, fuck.
he is such an underrated director. Did you ever Hard Times? I think that was one of the first films I ever saw. And if anybody doesn't remember, James Coburn and Charles Bronson, and there's one of the best lines that their dog, their cut man, is a hophead. He goes, some people are born unto failure. Others have it thrust upon them. Because he's a doctor, he's flunked out of medical school because he's a heroin addict. What did you ever see the DVD version of The Warriors, the updated one with all the cartoon inserts?
I didn't see the last one because I know they had a few years back that they had an extended version director's cover. I didn't see the anniversary one. No.
Yeah. Well, the good thing about it is they cleaned up the color and the lighting, and now maybe for some people that's, you know, akin to The Godfather. You don't. you don't mess with that. Make it as dark as you want because it's at night. It's except for the very last scene. And but they did a wonderful remastering job. But then Walter Hill decided he wanted originally to have little comic book fadeaways between scenes as if it was a comic book. And even though it is a very comic booky type movie, I didn't like that. I don't think it added anything to the film by doing that.
I'll tell you one thing, though, since you're now on your emulation status and you're playing your video games and such. Mm-hmm. If you cross the Warriors on there for PlayStation 2, it's a phenomenal, phenomenal game. It's a great transition from movie to video game. Has a great backstory with it as well that correlates with the movie. It's fantastic. I suggest it heavily.
I love it. I played it on a PSP, and it was just as good on the PSP as it was on PlayStation 2. And I don't know if they've that one is it's got a GTA type feel to it, but it's wholly the Warriors universe. So any game heads out there that are kind of poo pooing that it's too childish, no, it's a lot of fun.
Has the music, the soundtrack, just the same ambiance and the same look. Hey, Rockstar did a great job with it. I highly suggest it for you guys if you play games.
Totally. Anyway, guys, we're going to go back into the vid and we're going to say play a little bit more of this and then we're going to try the wrap-up show. So here we go.
And run the office and stop dilly down with these fucking two.
Right. You know exactly. I mean? Be a boss.
He's got to step up and just be their boss.
He's still an intern in his own mind. That's the problem.
There's never an intern here.
Whatever, a shadow traffic stooge.
Yeah, but in defense of Gary, though, sir, the way the show's structured.
Oh my goodness!
I mean, part of the brilliance of the show is part of.
Artie, that's your famous line. In defense of Fred, in defense of Robin, in defense.
I've never defended Fred once.
No. Or me. I never recall that being said.
I can't defend you, you fuckhead.
You had to defend Fred because he's the only man in that place. That's why he's been dragging him with him for 35 years.
He's a real man.
35 years? How dare you?
I've been dragging him like a ball and chain for 35 years.
35 years.
Man, he's a man.
What kind of a fruit are you?
Damn it.
Hey, Hal.
Yeah.
How's Gary going to get those guys in line when they know, like little kids, they can run to someone above him and make fun of Gary?
And that was Stuttering John's whole defense. I know we covered that in the first one. And it's something that Howard never really ever understood as well.
Yeah, it's demeaning when you're undercutting him, but yet at the same time, Gary also laid himself out that way as well. Like he was never one to put his foot down. And anytime that he would try to put his foot down, because I've been watching recently the old videos and stuff of him interacting with the interns or staff like John and such, it's always this back and forth. There's a certain level of management, and you would know as well that when you're speaking to an underling or an employee and such, you're not to have a back and forth banter. We're not doing this. It's what I say, or it's give me advice or not give me some info, give me something that could help with the project, whatever the case may be. Or if it's a discipline thing, listen, this is what happens, A, B, and C, and we got to rectify it. But he sat there and he would argue with them like if he was their equal, and that it never transitioned well for him.
No, and in fact, but what Howard not understanding that you have to give that person actual power if you want them to be effective as a quote unquote producer. Like if he's going to be a producer, he has to be able to know exactly what you want and actually do most of your work for you, although you get give you the bullet points at the end so you can review it and then say, yeah, you were right about this, you're right about that. Let's try this guest. I think this one might actually be good. And then you're fine. You're taking away a lot of Howard's work. He still gets the final say, but he doesn't have to do the legwork. The Johnny Carson show worked very much like that with two producers, Freddie DeCordova and Peter LaSalle. And they each had different functions. Peter LaSalle was the guy who did a lot of the work, but Freddie DeCordova was the schmoozer backstage. He was the one, you know, making sure the guests felt good in the green room, and maybe they were feeling a little too good sometimes. If you ever see that Shelley Winters Oliver Reed segment, that was great.
Let's just say there was a little bit of extra Kool-Aid in the back room, if you know what I mean.
No kidding, yeah. And so, it's kind of I understand he doesn't trust Gary to do a good enough job. And I think that ultimately is why he made sure he could be a doormat for other staff employees, because he's a good figurehead. He can do some basic things right. And when he does fuck up, you can always turn it into a bit.
Let me tell you, as a newly elected shop steward at my job, I'm now like in that position of being the moderator or the mediator when it comes to counseling and such. And I see in different departments the way that different administrations, they run their staff or they have their relationships with staff. And it's funny when you get two sides of a story or two sides of a personality when it comes to one situation. And when you finally are able to piece it together and you realize, like, well, at the end of the day, this could have been easily rectified with just two or three simple, you know, tasks or movements. With Gary, he's at that mode where he's cheap labor.
Yep.
So, you know, if Wiggy wanted a real a producer, he knew he would have to pay on the high end for it. Secondly, he's fodder for the show. So that's content whenever he wants to be. And lastly, he knows that Gary's not going to excel anywhere else. Once the show is done, Gary's in retirement mode. He's not going to work anywhere else. There's nothing else for him to do.
Well, that's that was one thing I was going to ask you about, actually, because in the wrap up show segment, he talks about how, you know, if Whoopi Goldberg had a show and if they offered if I tried to, you know, if I got a job there, they'd pay me 2.5-3 times what I'd be making here. But it wouldn't be as entertaining, blah, blah, blah. But that was him washing Howard's ballsack, who he knows is probably listening to the wrap up show. In truth, do you think Gary ever tried to get out from under?
No. And it's all about comfort zones. You know, he mentioned that years ago that he did the MTV audition. Mm-hmm. He mentioned where they actually reached out to him to do some producing work for them as a side gig and such. But at the same time, he's comfortable. He doesn't have to do much work. You know, he's sitting in the lap of luxury when it comes to that place, because, you know, there's no harm, no foul. There's no real repercussions if something happens that doesn't please Howard. So
like booking a guest who's got whooping cough
or booking a guest that has at the same time, two guests at the same time.
I loved that. That was so much fun. Was that Jewel and who else was it?
Jenny McCarthy,
two blondes famous for getting their tits out.
I'm horrible for actually remembering that. That's terrible.
Yeah.
Hey, Hal, in defense of Artie, I think...
No, you see, a defining moment was yesterday. Gary knows Sal and Richard every minute are bitching and stuff. And he talks about it on the wrap-up show. Fine, good call.
Right.
Look, but listen, hey, Hal, I gotta go. I gotta pay my toll. I'm driving down this...
All right, go pay your toll.
So you're not in the conversation.
Oh, so he's talking.
I sort of feel that this is my fault because I was the one who said, is there no other recourse if a bit is never going to be played? I didn't know this was not a...
There's absolutely recourse.
Howard?
I will give it to the guys, and I'll say, hey, put it up there and play it.
On preview page 2 in red is Sal saying maybe we shouldn't play this.
All right, let me hear it.
And I will... But I still... It wasn't as if Sal ran in and said, stop. But
Gary, preview page 1 or 2?
In red.
Two.
I said two.
Oh, what a horrible system. It's a horrible fucking system.
Okay. Drink.
Maybe this should be an outlet again for bits you couldn't get played and they've been sitting there.
All right, because Robin's here, why don't you go grab Dead Grandpa Pizza? Go grab it, throw it on a CD.
Probably up right there.
No. This is a different proposition.
Howard wants to hit it first.
It's not going to happen. I'm telling you. Between you and I was about to erase it.
I'll go.
Okay.
Make
all right. So go make it. And now, Robin,
he was
is
about
a good
to
job.
Erase it. Who asked you to erase it? I didn't tell you to erase it.
But it was about to be. You know, we need room on the pages.
All right. Good. Good.
But
good.
Listen, Howard.
Okay. All right.
Nope. It's again, and this is the issue that a lot of staff members had with the wrap-up show and Gary in particular. He has power on that show. So now he felt he could swing his sword and say, you know what? Don't worry about it. It's going to get cut anyway. Not knowing or not feeling as though that Wiggy would have known or knew that this was happening. He thought that Wiggy would have never heard this.
It's got to be tough trying to predict what your boss thinks is going to be good or funny when he has no sense of what anything is good. And like, I would trust Gary to know that a bit was better or funny than if Howard said it was funny.
Well, that's what his job was. He was the gatekeeper for all that. You know, if he had the guys were going to run in to show their balls or shake their asses in front of somebody's faces, he's like, all right, go ahead. And there were other times where he'll tell the guys, no, 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 right now. So he had that power. But at the same time, it's like, you know how fickle fucking Wiggy is. You know that. You know that he can be on this level. So when it comes to certain things, you should know to stay clear of it. But once again, like I mentioned, this is Gary's point of power because the wrap-up show was given to him. And we saw down the line later, they took it away from him.
Yeah, Bowie definitely got a silverback monkey status when he decided, I'm going to be the grand poobah of the wrap-up show, and me and John Hine are going to rule over all these acres. And our pack mules, you know, Richard and Jen, you know, Sal, they're just going to have to listen and do what we want. But at the same time, if you give that guy a show, it should be like, look, if you give me this power, I'm going to use it. And so I don't fault Gary for that, but I think at this point in time, he should know after all these years, if Howard hasn't given the okay on something, maybe you have to keep asking him. Maybe you have to keep going to him and say, I'm not sure about it. And if you're not sure, expect that you're going to get fucked on, because he pounces on mistakes and he will not give you actual praise if you do your job right.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a compliment sandwich in his deli.
No, no fucking way. The pot, half of it on the side.
All right, I can't take this.
But I'm not here. I'm not out to.
No, you sabotage.
Well, I'm not out to sabotage you.
You did, but you did.
But I mean, do you?
You sabotage.
Are your decisions right 100% of the time?
Actually, yeah. Yeah.
Fart man, anyone?
How was during the high school years?
Kane. Do we go into like, you know, what was the one, oh, Jesus Christ. Now I'm forgetting. Doomsday.
Doomsday.
Jesus.
I actually wanted to see that. I was kind of excited to see that. I thought that would have been cool.
The worst thing he would do, he'd stick his fucking tendrils in his own mouth. He should have done that more often. Then he wouldn't have had these problems of announcing a project and then not doing it. There's nothing worse than telling people, you know what, I'm gonna start fucking working out. I'm gonna lose like 30 pounds, and then you put on five. Yeah. You know, 5 months later, they're all going, so where's this? And then that Whale Rock announcement in 2015 when they re-signed, and that was strictly to get his name tied in with the Kardashians, who were associated with that at the time. That was the one of the stupidest, one of the dumbest moves on the planet, and that we, as if we couldn't see what that was about.
Porky's. Yep. 3 o'clock high. How did those turn out?
No kidding. And actually, I just saw it today. It was in the New York Post, but I don't know when the thing was actually released, but there's an article showing that. Reporting that Eddie Murphy and Dice are going to be in a heist movie for Amazon, I guess Amazon Prime. Wow. And that's actually kind of cool. I mean, these are two iconic comedians and, you know, a yes of the past, but both good actors too.
Yeah, yeah, that would be interesting. I'd like to see that.
So what are the odds that he tries to tap Dice to come in for an interview to try to get Eddie?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see that happening.
No?
Oh, no.
I think you think Dice is too hot for the show now?
Yeah, I think he's done. I think Dice is already, he's already had his history with the show. You know, after a while, you know, it also becomes what Wiggy has not only changed or transformed himself to, mm-hmm. but it's also relationship-wise, he's just not that same person. It's not that same circle anymore. You know, it was always, even when Dice came back during that during Sirius, the earlier years and such, when Artie was there and such, he had maybe something that was still like connecting and clicking because Artie was there. Now there's someone else there to click with. Him and what are we going to hear stories of when Dice and Wiggy went looking for houses and stuff like that? That was 30 years ago. Like, nobody wants to hear that shit.
Well, that's it. And number one, everybody's heard the stories before, and also they were a good story, but it's not they're not evergreen. You can't keep doing that. And that means, and it was no different when he talked about seeing Gilbert in the hospital and doing things for him. And then that's the only interaction with him you had, like, outside of your fucking show. I mean, it's embarrassing.
And for Eddie to even dare to go through that door, like, I was even shocked that Sandler came in through there. I was like, really?
Me too.
I guess he was a favor to that, because I know Rock and Spade will, you know, come and visit and always try to push him to go. So I guess he threw him a bone, especially having Ronnie in a flick and stuff like that. But for Eddie to go in there when he can go to Kimmel, Fallon, Myers, any one of those and get a bigger reach than being on Wiggy, I don't see it happening.
Yep.
I'm always right.
You're never wrong.
Never. I'm never wrong. Okay. I can't even give you an example of when I'm wrong.
Well, I can give you one example.
When you're the boss, that's the thing.
Oh, yeah, he can't be wrong for himself.
Go ahead, tell me an example of when I was wrong.
You supported Bush in the war, and then you changed your mind.
That's not wrong.
This is what kills me about Gary. He finds the most stupidest points to make about when you could have Wiggy in the crosshairs, and I mean, you have to really, like, get the nice moment to get the kill shot for him.
Yep.
Throwing that out there is such an asinine fucking thought. That's not wrong. It was a moment, an opinion that he went with. That's not a wrong decision. He always does that too. Gary always does that.
Right. We just gave him like four or five answers that he could have given him. We could have told him, like, don't leave fucking terrestrial. Right. You're going to, you know, long term, he doesn't know that at 2007. But these days, I'm almost certain if Howard could have done it again, he'd have never left. Not even for the money, because he's just, if he could have guaranteed that he would have stayed, you know, in the top three, at least, of whatever market he was in, he would have stayed, I think.
Honestly, with the way that, like, TuneIn and iHeart and how they're going right now, he would still be he would have been dominating. And with now how their censorship works these days and such, that it's a little bit more lenient, and they also have their good delays and stuff, he would have been fine. But you know, he took the money, and now he's with an audience of three.
Yeah.
That was an opinion at the time.
Which you changed.
Right.
Based on lies he was feeding us.
I was told a series of facts about weapons of mass destruction.
Bad example.
But because you can't even think of an example where I'm wrong. I'm never wrong. How can I be wrong?
I got one time you were wrong.
Go ahead.
1986, that outfit on Letterman, the black leather pants and the brown cowboy boots.
All right, you got me there.
It wasn't even right at the time.
It would never be right.
God, that was...
The bouffant hairdo. I mean, come on. I'm picking Ralph as a stylist. Like, that's where else can we go with it? Shit.
It was Urban Cowboy. Christ almighty, and John Travolta, God knows. Just a perfect reference right there.
You posted a picture in the group page the other day, and I was so pissed because I had it on the tip of my tongue. I was like, where have I seen this? Where did I see this video from? With him with his Skater Boy shirt? Yes. And I'm going, where? And I still can't, I can't get it out of my head where I've seen it.
And so to this day, so I asked people if anybody knew the exact video, because a lot of the clothes he does wear again and again, this specific one and that look, and is still any clue?
No, it's still, I'm still trying to pinpoint where it's from. It's going to come to me. I know it's going to come to me one way.
Well,
I'm
well,
pop up in the middle of the day and just be like, anal ring toss.
This Sunday you'll get the answer, because it's from the beginning of the bro fight.
Oh, damn. I was close. I said, you know, ring toss. So it was around that time.
Yeah, no, that we've it's not struggling, but I thought with Kayla, I was wondering what episode, what should we cover that we haven't gotten to yet, but also what haven't we cleaned up? And as with the Ralph Steals Money saga, you know, that I did part with Sam, and then in the wrap up show with Carrie, there was so much more to the bro fight that I wanted to do at the time that Sam didn't want to do. She thought, let's just stick with, you know, the fight itself. And I go, no, you need the whole story for this one, because Otherwise, you know, you're not getting both sides because they'll never play. Even in the middle of a fight, they're never going to play all of the clips they should be playing to right. explain the story. So when you go with you bringing in that girl, Jen already was the best. He goes, she goes, when you know, because she said, I'm into chubby guys. And then he goes, so are you going to like a sumo convention to pick up another?
It's like there's someone on YouTube. Sorry that I forget the name of the channel, but they have like it's a 4 hour video of the whole bro fight saga. Like they had it's crazy.
Yep.
You know what I kept thinking of today when you were getting mad at me off the air, then now, you know what I kept thinking of? You know what tomorrow is, right? It's take your children to work day.
Oh.
And I thought like maybe they should see this.
You know what, Garrett? Honestly,
see what you do things wrong? Yeah, why should your son see that?
They should see me get emasculated.
Emasculated?
Yeah.
I'm the emasculated one. I'm the one who feels emasculated in this.
Yeah, try telling a narcissism that you're the victim. Good luck.
But Gary's wrong too. He's not being emasculated. What it is that he's being told that he was wrong.
He was fuck up. Yeah.
But what makes it the more emasculating part that he feels is because he's arguing and it's like, no, you fucked up. Like just take it. Sometimes you just, and that's the whole thing. You know, these individuals. Because Gary has his moments of narcissism. We know that he's the elitist. So you gotta take it and eat the crow and just go with it.
It is totally like that supercomputer at the end of the Coyote Bugs Bunny short where it says go back and take your medicine.
Exactly.
I don't even have control of my own show anymore. You and Sal and Richard emasculated me. Yes, you cut my balls off. What do you mean you're emasculated? Your son should see how you emasculated me.
Yes, he should. Both of them.
I mean, what is this?
Sounds like everybody's running around here with no ball.
Yeah. He's emasculated.
Yeah, you know, I've never been a producer. I think right now, you, after hearing that tape, I got to apologize to Sal. I mean, you were clearly the protagonist in that.
No, but he made it sound as
and
if
Sal
was...
did clearly say maybe he wants to hit, and you were like, but he didn't say don't play it.
He said maybe he wants to
you have
hit.
To hear
but the, that's a good suggestion in that situation, obviously.
You have to hear the whole conversation leading up to that. There was a whole, I'm not saying I made the right decision. I'm just saying that Sal was like, our stuff never gets, he's acting like the entire time he was in there was like, we shouldn't do this.
Yeah, but if he said it one time, that's all that was needed. That was the one. Again, he's such a fucking idiot. I would love to just, I don't know, I'd love to, I'd read a book about the Mets and then school him on the Mets in a day.
No, he just, because he can't be wrong. And then when he's proven wrong, he can never say, oh, you know, you got me there. He can never have that.
With getting caught sleeping and DePace showing the video to Howard was an example of him doing whatever he could to just get away from the fact that you were sleeping on the fucking job. And most people who that happens to would get reprimanded at the very least. And he got away with very little. He got away with murder when that, in that situation. I would have let him sleep so much longer.
Years ago, like I mentioned earlier, you know, we mentioned about the kill shot that he could have had on Wiggy. The one that always I always listen to and it irks me is when he had him in the crosshairs about his fake admiration for music and he called him a poser. I'm like, you had him, but he veered away from it and is like, because he doesn't know how to articulate or even really argue with somebody or have a debate or a conversation with somebody about them not being a certain type of person.
Well, that's right, because he's not actually going after – he's not smart enough in the moment, and he's also too intimidated. You have to have a very good presence of mind and also talk a lot slower than he does and think a lot faster and understand you can see the pattern, the progression of where Howard's going. You can cut him off at the knees every single time because he's an idiot. Like he's just as big an idiot as Bowie is.
And the other one was always that around the time when Wiggy was getting, it was in chess mode and he goes, go back to your gay chess and all that stuff. Like, that's not, no, you're not going to win there, sir. You're not.
No,
Well, I mean, but I think you should admit you're wrong and deal with your people who work for you directly. It sounds like you're in competition with Sal now because your two kids talking to the teacher.
No, I'm not in competition. No, but what you said earlier is right. It's very difficult, and I had this problem with stuttering John for 10 years.
Oh, no, I know.
It's very difficult to tell someone you could do this, you could do that, when you know very well that they're going to run into Howard and say,
this is not that example. This is has nothing to do with that.
Yeah, that is definitely not the same thing. And again, we've talked about this. Gary with stuttering John, that was his own fucking stupidity as well. He told John things he shouldn't have done and shouldn't have. John goes to Howard, brings it up on the air, and now Gary feels like shit. Well, you're the one with the big mouth telling stuttering John what you made.
And then the other thing at that same time too was that with John didn't have the thing where, you know, he would goof on Gary where, you know, the big teeth, monkey looking, all that. They'll do that ribbing and stuff, busting balls. But with Sal, when Sal came in, he was venomous. Where he says, "Here it is, Howard. Gary's an idiot," and he was not playing. Like he was legit describing and saying that, you know, he's a bad producer.
Yep.
He warmed up to him later on, and then it became the goofing thing with the with the Gary mask and stuff. But early on, it wasn't the same thing.
Nope.
It's plain and simple. They
no,
went
what I'm saying
you.
As a general
you made
rule,
the call.
As a general rule, they could.
Could do what?
Usurping.
What are they doing? How do they usurp you? What, because they make fun Baba Booey?
No, just not that. Like they'll come in, I'll be like, we shouldn't do this. And then they'll come back in and go, you know, Gary said we shouldn't do this, but we were thinking this is funny.
Well, they shouldn't do that. So tell them not to do it.
So maybe you should, you know, do the whole parental thing that you and Gary shouldn't disagree in front of the kids. And you should take Gary.
Well, that's something that we found later on, especially with Richard, is that's very passive aggressive. Yes, you don't do that. But yet still, if you want to get your shit on, you still try to throw it in there. I mean, I can understand that.
No,
but yeah, it's very passive aggressive.
Oh, yeah.
Gary's the one who went out and reported to Sal our conversation. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Gary.
You're welcome.
Gary Delbate, everyone. Producer.
Now, do you want to leave it at there and then just go to the wrap-up show? Because I think that's plenty of that.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So let me just get the clip in question. I just downloaded it. And so much amazing. So much better having that fucking website available, the Google Drive.
Well, I go to that when I'm looking for specific things to go to sleep to. That's like what I go to.
Okay, let's check.
Got some jokes that I haven't tried yet on the show that I want to try.
783-7610.
Okay, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, guys, we're going to go into the wrap-up show segment now, and we hope you get as much out of this as we do. We know, but we will. So here we go.
It's weird when the first topic is actually the wrap-up show today. And
I had to come by, John. I'm sorry to interrupt because I've got some jokes that I haven't tried yet on the show that I want to try here.
Any of them funny?
No.
You seemed flustered when you were trying to do my preview today.
First time ever. You know what? Here's what happened. You came in and it reminded me of it, and I said, fuck, let me get a piece of paper, and I'll write down a bunch of shit and try to do it too quick. That's what happens when you rush things. The secret to comedy, take your time.
I think it was inorganic.
Well, you still nailed three, though. Got to give you that.
I got the subjects right, yeah. The funny part about it is if I got to nail it, because then the funny part is it sounds like his cadence. But let's move on to your guys' fuck up later and yesterday and all that other shit.
Now, this morning when you got in, was Howard pissed at you instantly or what?
Well, no, because he didn't know anything about it. I told him about it.
Oh, he didn't realize that the bit even got played.
Yeah, I said to him, as soon as he walked in, I said, hey, I want to tell you about something that happened on the wrap-up show yesterday, because I was going to start with the wrap-up clips. I got to tell you, one of those things that I just totally didn't see it coming, in the sense that, like, I thought that yesterday there was a chance, but I really didn't think he'd be angry about it. You know, again, he could have just as easily said, oh, that's great. Now that we played the bit, we'll play it here. That's great. And so I didn't see it coming.
And it came.
Yeah, no, fucking, listen, man.
It came like Nick Manning.
Artie.
But it's like you said, it's like you mentioned earlier that you don't know with Wiggy. You don't know because he easily could have said that. He could have. But at the same time, it's, you know, maybe he was in a hissy fit that moment. Maybe he was alluding or giving out a piss mist that day. So, you know,
and Gary walked into it. So it could have went either way.
Yeah, you got to pick your spots. You got to know, like, maybe ask him after he's had a great interview with someone and that he's feeling like, oh, wow, that was awesome. And we were, or a really funny bit, then he'd be more like, yeah, well, no problem. We'll play the wrap up show clip here. And, you know, it wasn't even that great of a bit. The truth is, if anything's a really good bit, and I think they would have already cherry picked these things. So I think it's such a non-story in a lot of ways that if it was such a great thing, they would have played it on the air directly and forget about the wrap up show. So again, I think while Gary's wrong, I do think Howard's making way too much out of it than it really is.
And then plus, you know, it's like I mentioned, it's Gary superseding his boss's creativity, I guess.
Yeah. Stifling the Pelican.
How many years you've been on the show? 6 years?
6 years.
Right? Yeah. And Howard's broken your balls pretty badly about Dana or whatever else.
Right.
But you've never been the subject of a rant like that, right? Where you could tell he's fucking...
Never on that level.
And John, you?
No.
It's brutal. I mean, it's just brutal.
See, I think you and Stuttering John all suffer from that thing of like... And well, Sal and Richard, to a certain extent, this is... your beginning.
I don't know. I think Artie might have gotten hit with a shitstorm when he was deciding to do Beer League. He gave him some shit for that about, you know, the scheduling and stuff.
Yeah, I covered that with Bob ages ago, and it was just a circular saw of bullshit and all that passive aggressive thing. Like, well, you can go, but you got to know, you know, I need you here and all this stuff. And that's what happens when your contract is not, it's not definitive enough. Like Conan and Leno, the big beef there was, you know, Leno paid off Conan's contract and because they wanted him out, and they said, let's put Jay back in. And it was cheaper to buy out Conan than it was to buy out Jay. If they bought out Jay, it would have cost them $150 million to kick him to the curb just to placate and keep Conan on. But it only cost them like $40 million to kick out Conan.
Right.
Yeah, and also, I don't believe in Conan's contract it had any. This was the other key thing. He did not have the right of like scheduling time. So when they decided you're not going to go on at 11:30 or whatever it is, like you're going to go on at 12:05 or whatever it was, that he couldn't do anything about it, and that was stupid because the time always. It's always supposed to start whenever 11 o'clock or whatever time it's supposed to start. Him going later was his own stupidity.
Yeah, it always angered me when I would hear Howard and his thoughts about Artie going to do Beer League because he made it seem as though like Artie had the principal direction or the
financing.
Financing or not even the chief of cinematography or photography or whatever the case may be to, you know, when you have to film a scene, you set up at 5 a.m. and mm-hmm. you have to shoot by 7 and you got to get the lighting. That's how filmmaking works. That's how it happens. Yeah. It's just like, hey, you know, you could do it after 10 o'clock. You could be out of here by 10. And it doesn't work that way, especially on what scenes you're shooting, what lighting you're getting, the weather, whatever, if you're outside, whatever. He's a fucking prick.
Oh, yeah.
In this business, you know what I mean? And you were, you know, the channel traffic guy, John, Benji were all interns, and Sal was Richard's first big job in the business and stuff, and I feel he's more comfortable really railing against you guys for something like that. Plus, you're not in the studio the whole time. He's gotten pissed at me before, but with me, sometimes, if he's mad at me, it's a little more passive-aggressive sometimes, right. And that makes me so uncomfortable, but it's rare. He's usually nice to me, and it keeps the thing comfortable, but like today is, man, that guy, you can at least leave the studio because you have to at that point after catching that much shit. You
know? But I think that, I mean, I don't mean this in a negative way, but I think sometimes Howard sees me as his creation, meaning he gave me my first job, I started with him, and in fairness to him, and this is the part that's so hard to take, as I've moved up along the way, you know, he's rewarded me. And like when we started at Sirius, I remember we were in a meeting and he put his arm around me and he talked to, you know, all the big people here. And he said, listen, when you're talking to Gary, you're talking to me. You know what I mean? Like, I trust him that much, which was
in my ass. that was just to blow smoke or you know, to blow smoke up his ass or make it seem like they were some kind of big connective, you know, all one for all and all for one bullshit move.
let me ask you, if you not even work wise, because even work wise, I have people who I've probably worked with maybe less than 2 years. And if we're in a crisis or we're doing something, they instantly know my thought process because they've seen how I work. They know my training, my experience. They've worked under me or they've seen my direction, whatever. So if you know, if I'm giving cues here and there and such, they're on the ball with it. Gary's been with Wiggy for at this point by now by 25 years, and still can't pick up any of his cues of him being sarcastic or passive aggressive or being shady. He's still oblivious to it.
Well, and you know, Allison figured it out and divorced his ass. And because she, you know, but she had more FaceTime with him, so to speak, even though he was trying his best to avoid them at all costs. But yeah, you're right. He should have some kind of be smart enough and have the emotional EQ to know when this is the right time to approach him. This is the right time to say such and such on the show. This is the right time to be like snarky back and give him some shit, and also own, like, have a set of balls. I'm not saying you got to go in there and just tell him, fuck off, Howard, you're full of shit. But you're on a show where that's going to be more entertaining than if you just take it up the ass.
Right.
And you're right. He should know. But I think the inherent problem is Howard is so childish and so unpredictable at any given time. That's why Gary's not sure.
Yeah, but even still, like with parents who have children that could be that way, you get that sense as well as like of knowing behavior or sense of the environment or the situation that you like, OK, this could be a trigger or this could be something that it might not end, you know, fairly well. You get a fair sense of balance with it. I really believe that for, like we mentioned earlier, that Gary just was very timid and very intimidated by him for such a long time. And by this time, why would you still harbor that? Because he would say sometimes, and matter of fact, not even say, he would still have these tics where he would go in and got to clear his throat. It's like, dude, you've been with this guy for so long and you're still getting nervous? Like, what the fuck?
I think inherently there's something, and I wouldn't say it's a father figure type of, it's a father son relationship, but he definitely sees Howard as some kind of, I think for the longest time he felt Howard could do no wrong and I need to hitch my wagon to him. And so I'm beholden to him for that, as opposed to Artie, who, as he got more into drugs, I think the drugs were to hide his disdain of Howard and, you know, he and his disappointment of being on the show, being criminally underpaid, and also just hating being on there for certain things, and then being frustrated. Oh, you're not doing movies. You're not doing a TV show. A TV gig would have been 1,000 times better for Artie and more and healthier as well. Yeah. Filming once a week, rehearsals, table read throughs, craft services table, different times. And you shoot once and you're done and you get the weekend off. And you don't have any residuals, all that kind of stuff. If you get, you know, per diems and whatever, and then he could have done stand-up shows pretty regularly and without the need to do two shows in a weekend in order to make his nut. So Gary doesn't have that. Like, if he doesn't have this show, he has fuck all. And so I think inherently he knows that, and that informs how he's going to go on eggshells, walk on eggshells when it comes to Howard.
Right.
So I don't know. I at the end of the day, you're right. He should be more, what's the word? Telepathic, I suppose.
I guess in tune with his buff.
Yeah. But then, you know, when it came time to the Marcy Turk era, that's when I think Gary was at his most flustered because he had no idea what the fuck was going on. None of them did.
Yeah. When that became the transition, you felt it. You heard it, and it wasn't as though like it was a gradual thing that occurred. It happened, and it was like you just hit a wall. You hit, you know, the Titanic hit the iceberg, and you felt the jarring of it because, you know, gone went away. You know, went away the Sibian. Gone was, you know, shave or unshave the stuff like that, and it was just as though like, what am I listening to? Is this Morning Zoo now? Like, what are we listening to?
Yeah.
An amazing thing to say.
That's clear. Definitely.
But with days like today, they're just, you know, it's not any better now than it was 23 years ago.
I mean, 5 minutes into the show, hit number one, Teddy. Here's what Gary heard.
Gary, are you my producer or not?
Yes.
Fuck Sal and Richard. Are you my producer?
Yes.
What's the rule?
When we did the Friday show.
You call me up and you tell me.
I never played any of that stuff for you when we did the Friday.
Yes, you did. You came to me and said, do you mind if I play this? Bits Howard rejected. I didn't reject the bit. You got to fucking be kidding me. You're going to argue this with me?
I'm just saying. I'm trying to give you some insight into what happened.
Insight.
I'm
sick of your insight. Just tell me.
But you pay me for insight.
No.
Nostradamus.
Nostril dumbass.
Oh. Yeah.
It's once again, he still doesn't get the role that he has. There was times where Wiggy would get have a guest book, and he would look at Gary and say, "When did I approve that?" He'll tell me, "We approved that." He goes, "Jesus, what the hell was on my mind when I said to approve that?" And Gary would sit there and go, "I told you, boss, you wouldn't have had a home, but you want to put them on anyway." But, you know, those are the moments right there where Gary should keep that mindset. But, you know, if I pass it through him and it doesn't work, it's his fuck up. Let him be the one that fucks it up.
Yeah. Well, I remember there was one when it had to do with Howard's so-called mad terror years, where Gary said on the wrap-up show one time, "I got shit on by Howard a couple times for not getting a girl's number and not knowing. Jesus, what's wrong with you, Gary? Get her fucking number, you know, whatever." And then Gary was saying, his standards changed so drastically. It was like initially a girl that would never, girls that would have never been on the show all of a sudden became tens because he was single. And I had no way of knowing like which way he was going to go with it. And then Howard admitted, "Yeah, later on I got more selective." I'm like, what? Ralph with a tuxedo instead of shirt and jeans? That became the preference? Fuck off.
He realized that the people that were coming in had vaginas.
Yeah. Well, so Gary, if he's never known how to react to his boss or how to even if he doesn't know how Howard's going to react, the one thing you should be doing and locking in is how to be a fucking producer and being able to stand by decisions and make decisions. And when you get a fuck up like this, just take your medicine and get the fuck out. Artie was right.
Listen to me. Here's the rule yet again. If anybody doesn't understand it, you call me up and you fucking ask me if I'm done with something. How's that?
That I understand.
All right.
That.
Thank you.
But of course, it doesn't stop there. I looked at the clock at one point, and that was like 6:02, right? I looked at the clock at one point because you just think, like, how long could it possibly go on? I don't know how much longer it went on, but I looked at the clock and it was 6:38.
Well, it seemed like what really set you off, though, was the guy to your right.
Who, Judas the stockbroker?
Now, Sal, I was talking to Sal. You think you did nothing wrong, correct?
Can I say something?
Sure.
Gary doesn't believe it. I feel really bad for what I said, but from what I heard, Gary, the only reason why I came in is because, and I know you, now that I see the big picture, I know you didn't intentionally say it this way.
Sal, you'd be the smartest guy in the world if you left right now.
No, Gary said three times, well, Sal kept saying you took it off the board, so you always said the master of deflection is big on the show, and I thought you were pushing it on me. After three times of you saying, Sal said you took it off the board, I came in and said, hey, I'm the guy who reminded you maybe it's not a good idea to play it. Because I thought you were deflecting on me. And if you took it any other way, I'm sorry. But when you stormed out of there, I did say to Howard, in this case, I think Gary made the right call.
I
took a chance.
You ran in to say, hey, boss, not me.
I didn't. I swear to God.
Stockbroker mode.
There he goes. Yeah, listen, I got a hot ticket for you. I got a stock for you right now. You can get it low and it'll sell high. No, this
Wait.
Is no.
Wait, Patel? Ravadam Patel?
And I don't think anybody else here sees it.
And I'm religious.
Way. It came
and
off like that. It did.
Right.
Listen, you have the Howard Love Me Daddy complex so hard that while I'm getting yelled at, just because you were in the room when it happened yesterday, you have to go in and exonerate yourself.
Guys.
And by the way, no one has a bigger Love Me Daddy complex than Bowie.
Oh, definitely. But at the same time, like I mentioned earlier, if it was a few years earlier, Sal would have definitely been in swimming in this. He would have loved every moment of it. When we hear it here, it wasn't that way, actually. It was, it wasn't that, that kind of thing to where it's like, I'm steer clear for this one. No, it's more the fact that you got caught out there, Gary. You fucked up.
Yeah, got to own it.
Swear to God.
But that's exactly the way it came across.
You didn't need to come in on me.
You didn't need to come in. I wasn't putting it on you. I was saying we all sort of agreed. And when they played the tape, I didn't even hear you say that, which is funny because it's definitely selective memory. But you had to hear the whole show yesterday. You had to hear the way the whole thing went down. And nobody in here was against the idea. You know, I made the call. There's no doubt. But it wasn't like Sal's like, listen, you better stop right now, man. This is way fucking wrong.
So now the problem is Sal didn't, you know, emphatically tell him, no, actually, you must cease and desist, Mr. Bowie. This is wrong. Like this is he's like that guy at the end of the Andromeda Strain getting lasers in the cheek to try to stop the fucking bomb.
You know, the button is hitting. It's like, wah,
yeah.
Wah. No, but if you would have heard the rapper for the people who don't know, and they heard the rapper show, it was all about, you know, how they bits are judged or they are put in place in a certain criteria, a certain order of what will be deemed what's good, what's not good in the case may be. And then the guys are saying that, you know, that they're working hard. A lot of their bits are not doing well. At the end, Gary sat there and made that call because he wanted to be, you know, the high chief. He wanted to show that he was in a powerful move to say, like, you know what, we'll play it anyway just to show how shitty your work was for this one. And it didn't work out.
Nope.
And you ran in like you were a fireman putting out a fire. But just that's the way it went down,
right?
And it was a cunt move on every level.
The move that I made was because I thought
you didn't need to make any moves.
I thought you were making deflecting on me, and when I say something that deflects on you, you're the first to run in there too.
This is your stockbroker
and
bullshit.
When
it's
you
your stockbroker bullshit.
No, when you walked out,
tell me some fucking stock.
Dude,
some 40 shares of Woodgist.
Gary, listen to me. When you walked out, I took a chance with Howard and said, in this case, I think Gary made
Nobody
the right decision.
Nobody cares what you think. That's the problem.
It goes to show you that I'm not trying to throw you under the bus. I was taking your side.
So after you threw me under the bus, you just backed it up.
You're not taking his side, Sal. That's going a little further, too far. However, what you notice how Gary was navigating the waters there. He sounded very much like Howard. No one cares what you think. I don't want to hear you. All that talking down instead of actually just accepting his fault. He can't do that. And that part of that is the hubris, the newfound wrap up show king status. But the other thing is also strictly number one, not being intelligent enough and emotionally intelligent and savvy to know that he fucked up and should own it. That's narcissism. The culpability always lies with someone else.
Yeah, and this is once again this is the factory in which Wiggy has churned these individuals out they all have either already these parts of his personality or he has displayed or deployed his personality to them, and now they've become his. If you put them all together, they all become like a Wiggy Voltron. They're all just
What was the one? It was the Devastator. Was that the big Constructicon?
Yeah, it's funny because I don't mean to make a reference of it, but I was thinking about it since I've been going on this rabbit hole with the Dabbleverse and stuff, and they were I thought about it. I said with Stuttering John, he has become the Voltron version of the Whack Pack. He is all of them now. That's what made me think about the same thing when in with the Stern Show. Each of these individuals, you know, Robin has the same narcissism as Wiggy. Fred has the same shy and naivete and social awkwardness. You know, they all carry the same kind of different pieces from Wiggy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all extensions of his whatever, exactly. his shortcomings, I suppose. Sure. Well, I meant to ask you a question. So do you follow the Uncle Rico show? Like, do you pay or are you just listening to whatever they put on YouTube?
Funny story. I actually.
Oh, no, I forgot. You got a free sub.
I got gifted a month. I said, you know, let me try this out. Let me see what they because they both to say, hey, just go to the link and put gifts on. I was like, oh, never knew.
Now that you've got the free sub, do you want your money back?
Okay, so I've gone through this whole moment because there was a time being where I stopped listening to, you know, the whole Dabbleverse thing. I was like, this is just nauseating. I couldn't anymore.
Yeah.
Then he had gone away for a few months and he came back. So I said, you know what? Let me just check in to see if he's gotten better. Maybe he's, you know, working through. He's been sobered up, or maybe he's working through his issues or stuff. And I was like, okay, because I could. You guys don't know, I can't stand this fucker anyway. So, once that happened and he came back, it was 10 times worse, and I was just drawn in. But I wasn't listening to it like every day. Once I got gifted, it's now I it's not even them. It's not even, you know, Shuli and the guys, the super chatters, the viewers. They're actually the funniest. They're the funnier ones. They actually have the better lines. So oh, sure. That's what I really look out for. And plus, just to see the horribleness that's Stuttering John. But I'm almost done. My month is done. So I'm wondering if somebody's going to gift me another month.
Just make a few more one-liners, Jack Benny style Henny Youngman one-liners in the chat. And maybe they'll, you know, if it isn't you, it'll be what's her name? God, I forget her name. Gina Bobina, you know, or someone like that. You know,
I've yet to do it yet. I've not yet. I would never super chatting that. I would never do that. But
I mean, just a regular comment, not a paid comment. Yeah. Like, don't even fucking give them a shekel.
Yeah, no, I would never do that. But thanks for the gift, though, whoever gave it to me. Thanks.
Yeah, no kidding.
Thank you. You're a good guy.
No, what you're defining as throwing under the bus, I'm defining as coming in to defend myself over a deflection.
Once you
stormed out.
Did you feel that Sal was being accused? Guys, I'd be curious because, you know.
I heard it.
Did you guys feel that I was accusing or blaming Sal in any way?
No, because all I could hear was Howard yelling at you, and I think no matter what you would have said, it wouldn't have changed his mind.
But so, did you hear me say anything?
I don't think Sal was in danger of getting it blamed on him. You weren't, Sal. You weren't.
Okay, but whatever the case is, when Gary stormed out.
I can't remember exactly what Gary said, but you weren't in danger of being in trouble. It was all Gary. So
okay,
running
but,
in
I,
just,
but that's
you know.
What I heard my name three times, but... When Gary walked out to show my sincerity, I took your side. I took your side.
You know what? You repeat yourself.
But I took your side, Gary.
It was too late.
I took your side.
But it is true, though. He didn't have to run in there. Gary was getting the heat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was him essentially adding a little lighter fluid to the fucking, the monk setting himself on fire here. Yeah. I think that The best there we me and you maybe we're going to cover a show, the one where Gary, I can't remember, was it his kidney stone, like gallbladder, no, kidney stone, that he had to go out, he was out of the office, I think he had a procedure or something, so he wasn't there that day. And then I guess, and there was a wrap-up show where they discussed how it was so much easier to work there now that Gary wasn't there.
And the next day Artie calls and says, "Hey, Gar, I don't hear what they said on the rapper show. Don't let it get to you, bud."
Oh man, it was such. I think Sal said it was like someone had taken away the sofa that you had to get around to, make your way easier through the space. But then Goodstein got on, and also they all kind of reiterated the same thing, that Gary was this roadblock to Howard, and it made me realize. Howard over time just stopped being so accessible to the people he should have been. And that made the show more difficult, because if you're not getting an answer out of the fucking boss and the actual boss, knowing that you have a couple levels of boss, but he's the one you got to go to and he doesn't want to see you, that everybody's time would be minimized if Gary took that much more, which wasn't much to begin with.
But that's what Wiggy wanted. This comes from the same guy who wants everybody to look at the damn wall when he's coming down the hallway so he could hide, quote unquote, meditate. You know, that's what he wanted, to have that buffer. And I bet that one day, it's like, they mentioned that that Larry Sanders episode when he was in the loop and he started in the loop and he doesn't want to be in the loop anymore.
Take me out of the loop.
When Gary came back, he was most likely, "Thank you for coming back so fast." And probably Gary wasn't supposed to come back so fast because of what a procedure he had, but he had to come back because Wiggy needed him.
I meant to ask you, I sent you a couple blinds. This one was from 313. It was a wrestling blind. So I always send them Jay's way if I find them. It says here, it is one thing to have your fellow coworkers in on the sex trafficking thing for the sports entertainment company, and quite another for the daughter of the sex trafficker to be involved too. Vince McMahon, WWE, Stephanie McMahon. And it comes, the article cited, it's a link going leading to an article saying Vince McMahon's daughter, Stephanie, WWE President Nick Khan, COO Brad Bloom, and former exec Brian Nurse are identified as previously unnamed key figures in Janelle Grant's sex trafficking lawsuit. There's that, and then there was another one. Let me see if I can find it here. Hold on just one moment. Okay, this is from 310. This former wrestling executive is asking people to move on, quote unquote, because he knows he covered for the big boss's sexual perversions, Jim Ross, Vince McMahon. What's your take on these? I don't doubt for a minute that Jim Ross didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, I know that the Gerald Briscoes, the even Pat Patterson, and during those times, especially in the 80s, the 90s, and the early 2000s, that they were somewhat in a loop. Jim, the only thing with Jim Ross was that he was always in and out with the company. It ran hot and cold because, at least with Jim, he wasn't one that wouldn't bite his tongue. And that's where at times he had gotten fired.
Mm-hmm.
Aspects. As per the other ones in question, especially Stephanie and Khan, Nick Khan came in, and it was almost as though he was going to, mind you, he came in as not only from the sports industry, but also he's a friend of Dwayne Johnson's. He's a close friend.
Yeah. Okay.
And I bet he went in there to actually try to clean up everything and was the one that was laying the groundwork on to get that TKO deal with the UFC. So I could see that. Yeah, he would have known something. As for Stephanie, it's tough because she did work so closely with her father, and that would mean that she knew of his shenanigans and going against the grain against her mother. Mm-hmm. But it's also a thing that it's never been clear what that relationship was as well. Linda and Vince's relationship, whether they were separated and such. All I've really been known is that Shane, the son, wanted no type of business or interactions or anything involving any of his father's doings. He did everything in his power. He moved across the globe to get away from it. Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised if Stephanie covered a lot of stuff. She knows where the bodies are buried.
I'd say Vincent and Linda's relationship was a lot like Dolores and Bob Hope. I'm just waiting for all the books, the stories to come out that, as long as people are still alive to be able to tell those stories. And we're talking over decades now. And a lot of people, they're passing more faster than we can imagine. But some of those old school guys just won't talk because they're absolutely, that's not my business, whatever. But if you could get, Jake the Snake under Truth Serum, or, if you could get, I don't know, some of the partiers like Don Morocco, I'm sure there'd be some stories out there that would fucking curl your toes.
Get fucking Jake 2-8 balls. He'll tell you everything. He don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And I said, and Howard goes, oh, so now you're going to tell me how to do my job? And I said, no, I'm not telling you, but I'm saying that in this case, I think Gary made the right call.
Nobody cares what you think.
All you could have done by running in there was amplify Howard's anger at Gary, which is essentially what you did.
And Howard was trying to tell you, he was kidding, get out. Like, this isn't your problem. This is Gary's problem right now.
I understand that, but again, I thought it was a deflection on me. And I'm sorry. I really mean that.
I think Sal knew exactly what he was doing, and he wanted Gary to get shit on.
I go the other way. I love the fact that he is naive to a lot of shit. I really do. He might have really thought that he was being helpful, but he just is not aware. He's not.
Or do you think the truth is closer to he thought it might go to him? He might catch some residual shit. But if the audio is there defending him, then he didn't really need to go in there at all and defend himself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Richard, but that clip they played yesterday from the show, and again, I said this in Sal's defense, it really incriminates you, Gary, because Sal did go, look, maybe Howard wants to hit it, and he's your employee. You're his boss. So after you go, no, I was going to raise a belief. What else is Sal going to say? That's not Sal's position as an employee to go, whoa, stop.
But that's how Sal made it sound today. Right. So did Sal need to come in and say that?
No, he didn't. See, that's the problem. But maybe you misunderstood what was going on, but you were in no danger of getting in trouble. Well, it was all Gary.
And you
coming in just made it a million times worse.
And
that's
Gary. And yesterday I was looking out for you. I mean, it was a joke today on the show, but yesterday I did point it out as well.
Don't help me.
Okay.
Richard, well, how did you? You know, we're having this conversation because you and Richard nagged the shit out of me.
So I know. And you help us.
The lines have been defined now. When I say no, it means no. I'm talking on the air, and when the mics go off, I'll tell you off the air. When I say no, you got to give me space to breathe.
Just like a chick when you're sex. No means no.
Except at the Howard Stern show. I mean, you know, like they know where they work. Those guys know that if they can get Howard's ear, they can fucking turn, you know, they can make time go backwards. They can make, you know, they can visit the planet Houston and, you know, heat vision fucking snakes. It's not that. You know, it's not that it's not rocket science. Sal was a fan before he became Sal on the show. So he knows how the fucking show works.
Well, that and you got to take a consideration, too. Those two guys, they're really just known for their prank calls and stuff like that. It wasn't until they had to do the extreme where they were putting paint on their balls and painting each other's face and shit like that, where that became, you know, their new shtick, their new thing. So every time they were fighting to get something, they were fighting to get on the radio, to get some screen time, to get some microphone time. So any little thing counted for them. So, you know, and if, you know, you put up 20 bits and only one of them is getting on, you get desperate and you want to find a way to get some more time.
But see, this is
insulted me for the last time.
This is kind of how this started, though. Like, we
hate it more.
Well, we hate to nag you, but
hate it more.
But we want to just ask once in a while: is this bit going to get played? If we never say anything, then chances are it is.
You don't know
that.
That's your problem. You don't know that I'm in there all day long plugging for you guys, and then I come out after I just plugged it to Howard and said, "Hey, let's try this."
But
then you're up my ass.
No, we don't. I mean, we're not being rude or anything.
I love Richard, but sometimes he's another one that just. He buries himself. He just digs his own grave.
Big time.
This goes along the line. Maybe we'll probably cover it later on where Sal and Richard were doing a show, and on stage they said that they were going to release an album of unreleased bits and stuff, and Howard tore their ass up about that.
That's on the master list. I definitely want to cover that because it falls perfectly in line with all of the, you know, Stuttering John wants to, you know, release this or t-shirts, and you know, Howard's like Artie's beer league trying to get time off. It's all the same shit. Friends of the Howard Stern Show, all that crap, and they were saying, I remember specifically in that clip, they were saying, this is stuff that they basically were rejected. These are things that we haven't done on the show, and we did them in our own time, and basically their own terrorizing telemarketers type stuff, but not that they recorded at Sirius.
I believe that they were actually like waiting to see a lot of those bits that weren't going to get played. So like Richard is asking whether or not something's going to get played. So that if it doesn't get played, that they could go, okay, let's put this in the library for the future so that we could have this as and then that's why Wiggy was like, well, then if I don't play it, why are we going to release shit?
Yeah, it's good.
I mean, I think we're just asking.
No, it's not rude, but it's clingy and needy. If you were a chick, I would say, give me a week to just get my shit together.
But I mean,
that's the worst. Give me a week to think about stuff that should take like a second of decision.
Right. We've always said they are so bad at analogies.
Not only that, like the communication level is also off the charts bad. When we did the Sal's Comedy Coach thing, and you remember the last part of it where they're in the office just going back and forth, and how clearly unhealthy that would be for any work environment. Interns are there listening to you bickering like a bunch of fucking old yentas, and all this. all of a sudden, Gary's. I love. I did like that. Sal got a little. Like Gary got a little bit back, but for the most part, you know, he gets his ass handed to him.
Right. I mean, You know, I don't want to be like come in there and bother you. All I'm asking is, hey, Gary, can we ask him if we can play like the wheelbarrow bit again?
But again, if I've already just asked him that, it's just like. It's,
but I don't
like
know that you just asked.
Well,
him
know
that
I. But that's. But see, that's the whole point. You guys don't respect my ability to handle it. Once you've given it to me, I've got it.
Gary, if I didn't respect it, I wouldn't have warned you not to play the bit yesterday.
Fuck off, cunt.
No.
I love it.
See, but no, shut up.
No, but you're not even being diplomatic with me.
You didn't. When you warned me yesterday, you
I
really
meant it. Why wouldn't I have? I came straight out and said, it was our bit. You know how much we want our bits. But I said, Gary, you sure Howard don't want to hit it first? And I agree with you. I agree with your answer. I didn't think Howard was going to hit it. So I was shocked just like you this morning.
Yeah, by running in, though, to pat yourself on the back
exactly.
for that little comment gets him in a shitload
of trouble.
Hey,
guess what? You're right. Guess what? At the gang rape, I didn't jump in. That's what that was.
Right, yeah.
Analogies from hell.
Yeah, but that was actually that was
a little more on point, a little more on point.
Yeah,
you're right.
Sal's history when that happened.
Yeah,
right. But the point is,
well, then
let's
stop. What happens when I know what I was thinking? You know,
but
you are
I
like,
defended you once you ran
you're,
out.
You're a broken record. It's always all about you.
No, it's not. It's about you.
It's tedious at times.
Bowie telling them something Mary's told him 1,000 times.
Yeah, I was about to say, talk about pot calling. I mean, really.
Real projection.
Here's what I was thinking. I, but you don't see me in this picture at all.
Sure I do. That's why I defend you.
Here's
when
what
you're
I
out.
Did for you.
Plus, it was on tape. You don't have to defend yourself. You knew he'd probably listen to it. Running in there, just Gary was already under a shitload of pressure. You just made it 1,000,000 times worse to go in and go, I said something, Howard.
But when he ran out, I defended him.
Have to make me sleep. You bore the shit out of me.
You're regular Clarence Darrow. And that's
after it all went down, did Sal come in with the apology? Or did
no,
he know
yeah, I told him on the air, don't come in. And I don't want him in.
I walked halfway in and he waved his arm.
I put my hand up. I gave him the hand like a gay man.
Oh, Lord. That's the worst. Bowie's giving you the talk to the hand shit. Fuck.
Brian in Red Hill, you're on the wrap-up show.
Hey, guys. What's going on? I think Sal's definitely got that love me daddy complex to the point where he gets like tunnel vision. He can't see how it's going to affect the other people around
you're
him.
You're right.
You know what I mean?
It is. It's weird. There's Howard and then there's Sal, and anybody who gets stepped on the way, it's okay because he's got to get to
but
Howard.
That's not true, Gary.
Because
that's how you see it.
No, it's sort of what you did the other night when you didn't talk about Beth and you only talked about Howard. You see a path and all you see is Howard. Howard's got like practically lit up like an angelic figure with a halo, and you don't see anything around him on the way between you and him.
It's not like Sal's begging to sniff Howard's balls.
That was another thing. Where the fuck did that
Where did from? That come from?
He always has his ball smell. I wanted. I'm just
so
curious.
Naturally you'd go, can I smell them?
This is more in line than what they'd have, you know, in Cocktober for sure in 2024. But I digress. God, comedic minds. Be honest. I have to ask you this. In that clip that when he was putting in $5,000 for Richard to lick Sal's balls, did you find that funny or were you like horrified or were you just laughing at the laughing that was going on in studio? To me, it was the latter.
It was a mixture of both because especially when Artie says that
I'm paying for gay pornography.
He said, I signed it on the moment paying for gay stuff, gay shit.
Or when he also said you guys threw out way too far a low a figure for this room.
That's what I'm saying. Like that was the more funny part. It's like the subject matter of when they spoke about if Richard would see Gary or Ronnie sucking Gary's dick or something like that. He's like, I'll find it hilarious. I said, no, I would find it fucking gross. But for that segment, it was more of the hilarity that especially with Artie making it funny.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was that odd. I told Sal afterwards, I mean, I would sniff his balls too, probably. That's funny.
The Barnhouse fag didn't think anything was wrong with it.
Robin Long Island, you're on the wrap-up show.
What's up, guys?
Hey, Rob.
I wanted to comment about the whole Gary, you know, rant today, but I also wanted to ask Artie a couple things. What's up, Artie?
What's up, bro?
Nothing. And actually, Howard, to you, question too. First of all, Art, you know, our relief pitching for the Yankees is just terrible. You know, I feel your pain, man.
Well, it's the saddest subject on earth right now.
I know. Yeah. I just wanted to ask Sal, too, a question. Do you remember the Killer Be Killed thing that you guys did at Caroline's in September?
Yeah.
Yeah, Artie, Simon Yankee, and everything. Is that going to be on Howard TV soon?
It should be. There's like three of them in the vault that they've been working on. So I'll talk to Doug Goodstein.
Oh, that didn't air yet?
Right. They aired two of them.
Rob, what's your more. Question about the Howard and Gary thing?
All right, no, it was more of a comment. I just, you know, I did kind of think that Sal was pretty, it was unnecessary for him to come in and add on to Gary or whatever. But that's what makes the show just so great. Those Gary rants are just so classic.
I don't, there aren't a lot of Gary rants. I mean,
not lately.
Not in general. I usually take the shit, but I rarely.
No, I think he meant the rant against you.
That's
what he meant.
Oh, there's plenty of those.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I love you, Gary. I think you're great.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
It's all good until I come in, complain about it, until I go on the wrap-up show and call for Sal a cunt 12 times.
That's an unfortunate thing for Gary, because you got to realize if Gary had somehow jumped ship and went to the biggest radio show in L.A. 5 years ago, he'd be treated like Lorne Michaels, you know. But he's still at the place where he started, and, you know, the structure of the show is if you snitch to Howard on him, that's a good thing. You're rewarded for that, and Gary has to sit there and take the rants because it's part of the brilliance of the show. But Gary, I'm sure if he had jumped ship to go to some other big market radio show a few years ago, would be treated like God, because that's the reputation.
I'd be miserable.
No, he would not be treated like God. I mean, are they really deluding themselves this badly?
Yeah, pretty much. And although maybe at a other radio station, you know, if it was like a morning zoo or afternoon drive, he'll skate by because he probably doesn't have to do much, but he wouldn't get the big fucking money that you think it is. It'll just be him booking, you know, a woman who has a pottery class every 2 weeks at the local YMCA or some shit. It wouldn't be nothing crazy.
Hence my earlier question. Do you think he was too afraid that it would get out to Howard that he was shopping himself around looking? Because I remember when he was talking about trying to network with Mark Burnett and, you know, maybe get on some, I don't know, some mainstream gig somewhere. Do you think he wouldn't have because of Howard just being afraid? Or do you think he inherently knew he's unhireable anywhere else?
More the latter, because I hated to agree with what Ralph had mentioned about him, saying that he's a good producer for what Howard wants for Howard's show. Anywhere else, like he never really was able to do anything else because of fear of pissing off Wiggy, and also knowing that there's nothing else he can do. There's nothing else that he's capable of doing. He doesn't know anything else.
No, he doesn't.
Miserable.
Well, right. I'm just saying, if that happened, though,
I'd be miserable producing the Tempest Bledsoe show in L.A.
Look, in other words, if I was still working at the place I was working at when I was 20 years old, they'd still look at me like a shithead in a lot of ways, and I get yelled at. What are you going
to
do?
I'll tell you what. Not that anybody asked me, but when Whoopi Goldberg came to New York to do radio, if they were looking for a producer, they probably would have paid me, I would guess, 2 to 3 times what I was making at K-Rock.
Absolutely.
But I would have been miserable.
So he knows that he's being underpaid.
That is true. And that's why I mentioned earlier that he's getting for the bang for the buck. You know, basically, like when you're shopping, you're paying more for the quality. And Wiggy paid him less because he knew what quality he was going to get. You know?
Yeah. Do you remember the bit when Ganji and Doug Goodstein did like commercials for the show? And then that was one of my favorite clips.
Oh, that was hilarious. I love it. And who's my Ganji? Why would anybody Ganji?
My favorite was, we don't have a Ganji because we don't have the money for people that are good.
Oh, man. There's this one clip of Gilbert, and I remember I've heard it maybe 2 or 3 times, and I can't find it ever again. And I tried looking on the directory we have,
It's when Gilbert is busting Ganji's balls, and he goes, "We have a hard out. Make sure we have a hard out."
Oh, I remember. Like
10 minutes, and it was hilarious.
Well, hold on. You just reminded me of one clip we got to play just real quick, and it's not going into like Howard, and it's not going into Richard Pryor like we did before, guys. Let me just see if okay. Guys, I want to play a little of this. This is Artie and Howard goofing on High Pitch Eric because he was using some TV terminology and they're just busting his balls. They're just going nuts because something he must have heard. So I think that this is kind of a tribute to Gary, what Gary might sound like when he's trying to put his CV together and get in interviews with maybe other with other stations for jobs.
I heard you got a job.
Oh, yeah, good.
Yeah, he's gonna do voiceover on Jim Brewer's cartoon.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, it's not yet.
Oh, it's not?
No, I went for voiceover work the other day.
As a regular voice?
Yeah.
Wow, that's good money.
That's one of the people I grew up with on Long Island.
Does Brewer have like a cartoon deal that I don't know about?
Evidently he does, I'm hearing of it. I mean, but any cartoon is good money to make.
It's being shopped around by MTV.
What?
It's being shopped around by MTV.
Why would they be shopping it around?
Eric just isn't repeating some phrase.
Shopped around.
It's being shopped around. He overheard Brewer say something. Yeah, they're shopping it around.
No, Brewer said he's going shopping. What's funny is that, like, here's High Pitch getting voiceover work, and you can't understand a fucking thing he says.
I know. Your voice is unique, exactly, but yeah, you can't understand.
Is he shopping the project around?
Yeah, to MTV.
Oh,
he's shopping it to MTV.
Yeah.
Not MTV shopping it around.
He's got a 13-episode penalty.
There's
a penalty if I don't fit complete. I have a signing bonus. Yeah, if they don't shoot it, I get a 13-app penalty. Yeah, and I can't believe it's 26 guaranteed in the can. We're looking for a showrunner. We're interviewing some showrunners right now.
Come on, Howard. How about you and
that yeah, it's a pretty intense deal. I've got 5 points in the back end. The manager says I should do it, but my agent doesn't know if I should.
Come on, Howard. Will you stop?
It's pretty cool the way I got it. I met with my public relations guy, and he planted some items in the press. He's working paid six.
Come on,
so we go in for the pitch meeting. I'm sitting there with the head of development. Fucking guy gives me 26 guaranteed. I don't even open my mouth. Tells me we have a 5-year commitment. Then we're talking syndication rights. I'm going to meet with Michael King from King World.
Fucking World.
So I said, fuck King World. I'm playing an oddball. Right.
It reminds me of the same time when Gary comes in and Howard is asking about when is his vacation time, and he goes, "Hey, Buff, we go dark at the end of March." He goes, "Go dark? What are you coming up with that terminology? Go dark?
I love that.
We're in radio. What are you talking about?"
Oh God, he's just wishful thinking on Bowie's part. Listen, if he had a TV deal somewhere, he's all of a sudden he thinks he's working for Dick Wolf instead. He's half right, the first half.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you got it. And nothing personal. I love Whoopi as an actress, but who could sit and listen to that all morning?
Hey, go ahead, Ben.
Oh, Garrett, Howard sort of said it before. If you had to choose today, being treated like that, I know you choose never to be treated like that, but on air, off air, isn't it better on air?
Well, today I got both of them, so it's very. I can't tell you. Today, after you get the off air one, the on air one really hurts because we've sort of been down that. We did it. You told me you were unhappy. You told me the way you wanted to go, and I got it. I think I'd rather have it off the air.
Let's talk to Doug in Virginia. Hey, Doug, you're on the wrap-up show.
Hey, what's going on? I got a question for Artie, but basically it's meant for Sal and Richard, so you two pay attention. Artie, how many writers are out there that write bits and the like and propose it on a TV show, another radio show, whatever the case may be, and they get turned down? And how many of those writers bitch and moan like these fucking cunts do?
I see the point you're making, but again, we're in a very unique job here. I've never worked on a show that's like this. Writers at television shows get
get turned down all the time for ideas. And you know what? There's a lot of bitching that they do, but it's internally. It's not known by the bosses and the muckety mucks of the show. But here, when they bitch, it gets on the air, so Howard knows. Therefore, you know about it. So there's a lot of bitching in TV with writers, but you don't hear it as the audience member. And here, you do. So in their defense, what are you going to do?
I'll give you a great example.
He's right. He's absolutely right.
Man, listen, we all can't be a fine gag writer.
Example, I love, there's like three different Saturday Night Live books out that tell you all about the background.
Writers at sketch shows, first of all, at Mad TV, which is the only, you know, reference point I have.
Maybe we're below the line, but we're still a valuable part of this production. am I on camera A?
Can you catch me on my good side? How's the lighting here?
Where's the warm-up guy?
The bitching was insane. And I used to bitch when I didn't get sketches on, but there's not a 20-minute segment of the show that's on the air dedicated to us bitching.
Right.
Here there is, so you hear it.
And we get turned down on a lot of calls that people don't know about.
Right.
Like, these weren't bits that were rejected. These were accepted that just, you know, didn't get played for a while.
I would love to hear all the rejected bits they had. They must have been lower than whale shit.
Can you change the font on the teleprompter? I like more Arial Black than New Times Roman.
Goddamn a font reference.
Right. Wow. So your point is well taken, but that's you hear it here. You don't on other shows.
But Richard, here's a gray area. They weren't really rejected, and they weren't really accepted. Right? Would you agree? They weren't really accepted, but they definitely weren't rejected.
I really felt
the Grandpa Pizza one was rejected.
Was the point you're going to make about the SNL?
Like, I read all those SNL books, and they talk about the early days and just how brutal it was to be a writer in that room.
I've read it.
And how shitty you would get treated. And I think I remember reading one book where Franken and Davis, they hired them. They only had one writer's salary left, so they hired them and let them split the salary.
Right.
It's kind of like how Richard and Sal got hired.
it's no different.
Which was like nothing. And I remember, I think it was Chevy Chase was the head writer when they first hired him. And Franken wrote a sketch. And Chevy Chase, in front of the whole writers, just took it and tore it in half and goes, "This is shit." Mm-hmm. Now, did Franken and Davis get to go on SNL for 20 minutes and tell the whole world what an asshole Chevy Chase is?
Can't do it. Well, they waited in like a snake in the fucking grass and did it in a book later. And Chevy Chase is known for being an asshole because of those stories that have been made public. But like writers at sketch shows, a lot of them are former comics. A lot of them are guys who have been yelled at their whole lives. They're bitter, angry motherfuckers. And if something bombs at a network read through for a sketch show, because Monday morning, the actor's got to be very experienced with the script already, because you got to act it out and sell.
Not for Jackie, because I'm the head writer of the Channel 9 show.
Yeah, totally.
I love what Fred says. He goes, "We're a tribe of two Indians, and there's only one chief."
Yeah, pretty much.
Tell it to the executives. And if you don't, the writers blame the actors for not being ready. The actors blame the writers for not being good. And there's open, overt bitterness and hatred. And that makes for a very unhealthy atmosphere. I know Saturday Night Live is the same way from people I know who work there. I think it's better that our shit is on the air, because you get it out in the open, everybody hears it, and there's not internal hatred. Here, everybody knows, and there's no people like secretly wanting to kill somebody.
But here's a big element that's missing from the show, and I mean this in a good way. There's really no competition here. There's Richard and Sal do the bits, and they don't compete with each other. And
is that true? I mean, I think there's a little bit of competition.
So this has me thinking about, since I've been doing the Jackie impression, there's been two, we saw two facets of Wiggy during the years. We had the flying gag rider Jackie, and then we had the Benji years, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you were able to do it, but besides Jackie laughing at his own jokes and knowing that he wrote something funny, for me, I always knew a Jackie line hit because it wasn't Wiggy's personality to say it. You know, it was outside of the realm. Whereas with Benji, you'd never quite know what it is, because to me, they're both the same kind of bland individual.
Mm-hmm. So, and if you wanted a litmus test, all you had to do was see Howard on any late night talk show without Jackie's lines to make him funny, really, or even Benji. Let's give him some credit sometimes, I suppose. Maybe I don't know what line would be. But by and large, without Jackie, you heard the difference in the radio shows following.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vision. It's human nature.
We write so much, work together so much. It's the best chemistry I've ever had with anybody in my life. But
here's the other part of it that I was going to say.
I'll wait for Sal's book.
There's nobody here. There's nobody that works on the show that doesn't want, like, there's not that element of somebody not wanting to see it succeed. Like at SNL. Right.
You would think that this was like the back room of your show of shows. they had the greatest comedic minds in fucking comedy history in that show. You would think that this is what we're talking about here. Like, we got the next Mel Brooks and Woody Allen all in that fucking room. It's fucking guys talking about fucking fart jokes and talking about Jews.
What's in my pouch?
In my pouch. Come on.
Yeah.
Other writers go, oh, I hope this shit sucks. I want everything you guys do to get on the air.
Not even to themselves. People are so mean. Like the writers like that are, they root for you to fail openly. And it really makes for a bad atmosphere. The bad atmosphere is just on the air.
Artie, do the actors end up like trying harder for certain writers? I mean, does that happen in that?
It depends. Sometimes you hate the writer to the point where you go, fuck it. I'm not going to sell your shit if you're going to treat me like that, and vice versa. Because a lot of writers on these sketch shows, now Al Franken's a perfect example. He's a writer, became a cast member.
Right.
At Mad TV, they had seen 20 years of that on Saturday Night Live. A lot of the writers wanted to be doing stuff on the air. They would write something, and if it didn't go well in the read-through, as a matter of fact, Patton Oswalt, the guy we've had on, he was a writer at Mad TV. Clearly, he wanted to be on the air. He wrote a 4-page monologue for me once that I read at the network read-through. Didn't go that well, and Patton said, I'm going to go in and just tell him I should do it. And I was like, do whatever you want. And, you know, that creates contention. I mean, I love Patton, but that was, you know, that's a typical move where that makes me look like shit.
That sounds like egotistical murderer fucking Patton Oswalt trying his best to shoehorn himself into a production that he doesn't belong. I never liked that smarmy cunt. And, yeah, I mean, like as a sitcom extra or as a comedian, I never. And after that shit with Dave Chappelle and trying to distance himself from Chappelle, I had less than zero respect for Patton Oswalt before that. But after that, I was like, you're just like Jim Norton. You're worse than Jim Norton.
Yeah, it's a lot of undercutting, and I know in the business, especially comedy, it's cutthroat as such. But even that is just like that. It's so blatant. Now you could understand why. I was having a conversation with a couple of guys earlier about that, about how comedy these days is just not only just the material and how it's just been diluted in many instances, but just the crab in a barrel mentality is horrible. It's disgusting these days.
Yeah, the camaraderie, I don't know where it exists, but I do know guys like David Brenner, God rest his soul, he would workshop with comedians to help them make their stuff work. And he never really got beyond being a great Carson guest or a late night show, like a staple of late night TV. But he made more than enough money, like just touring and gigging constantly, and maybe even doing like writing gigs for shows, I'm sure. But he was such a mensch when it came to up and coming talent. Same with Rodney. I love Rodney so much for what he did to young comedians.
Yeah, Richard Lewis, who we recently lost, was the same. Like I was hearing a lot of outpouring stories of how even when he was struggling with his own issues, that he was still there to support everybody else and put them through when they needed it. And he was always there for them. It's not there anymore. Like it's sad to hear like a lot of these comedians these days, especially now with the forum of podcasting, they're all sitting just bashing and lambasting each other all through just so they could get the next 100 listeners to go on to their podcast. It's sad.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And it should be, I'm not saying it should be like one, the Rat Pack or something like that. But I think you can still foster some type of community where you do help each other just with everything. No one needs to know. I mean, the problem is in this industry, like when there are script doctors, it gets out there. This shithead didn't write that fucking movie. It was written by, you know, somebody else, a script doctor. And that hurts their credibility. There's loads of anecdotes over there about, you know, this one screenwriter who I think it was Ernest Tidyman, the guy who wrote The French Connection. He hired like three writers to write under his name, and he paid them to write scripts. So basically he figured, if I could, you know, get them to do the work and just sell them as, you know, who I am, I can make a shitload of money. So he paid three guys to do these scripts. They sold them for whatever money, and then they were so awful he never got another job writing again.
Yeah, it's I've heard numerous stories in it. It always like scared me to go to even try to dip my toe in that kind of water, because it's just and mind you, I grew up in the projects in Brooklyn, so you don't think I wouldn't be scared of shit.
Yeah, I mean it's what's it like in your part of the world? I mean, like, do you go to gigs? Like, are people, when you go to comedy gigs, like just stand up, pure stand up, are the audiences like, are they, is it a, what's the environment like where the clubs you might go? Are they, you know, are they polite enough? Do they respect the whole, you know, let the community, give the comedian a chance to fuck up or succeed? Don't heckle them.
It's been hit or miss with a lot of places, especially now in the gentrified areas of Brooklyn and Queens, where they're now slowly but surely popping up a lot of comedy spots, a lot of comedy clubs here and there. And a lot of times it's depending on that community, depending on what's the attraction, what's going on. Especially these days, like a lot of comedians are not very comfortable with their own material yet. So a lot of them like to do crowd work. So yeah. There's always that banter, and it's always it always interferes with what the whole essence of being at a stand-up event is, you know, because it gets lost because the young up-and-comers aren't comfortable with that. So the crowd is more involved. So it is distracting. I often at times, like once I see that, I just stand up and go to the bar because it gets annoying.
Well, crowd work is boring it depends who's doing it. And like there's some great fucking, there's some Todd Barry. he had a road work special. Basically was him just doing crowd work, actually. And it was actually really good in a lot of ways. I don't know that I would have released it as a special, but it was definitely interesting. And then Jeff Ross did that roasting inmates at Brazos Jail, county jail or whatever it was. It was an interesting little attempt at, you know, taking the roast somewhere it's never been and being, you know, the comedy Johnny Cash. But at the same time, I guess I'm a bit of a purist. I want the comedian to just go up there and do fucking jokes. I don't want them. Yeah, where are you from, sir? Well, who cares? No one cares.
I like I said, it's a lot of, we don't here. It's not a lot of, we don't see a lot of pros yet. They're not seasoned as of yet. So a lot of them aren't really comfortable with the 5 or 7 minute sets that they have. So a lot of times they like to have that banter, but I'm still believing that one day I'm just going to do it just one time. Just going to get it one time. By the way, do you know that I just received my slides? I hope I get the audition.
Oh God. Anyway, guys, we're going to wrap this one up. We hope you guys have enjoyed this two-parter, and we know anytime there's a Bowie bash or a bit of Sal, but already a lot of big potpourri. It's like a Chipotle mixed with fucking chicken tikka masala. You just can't go wrong. We hope you'll enjoy the next one as well. How about you, sir? What you up to? Any shout outs you want to give forth?
Yeah, I want to thank you guys on Patreon. I've been looking at a lot of you guys' comments on the shows that QF has been doing lately, and you guys have been really nice and supportive to me on this side. I know sometimes I could be a little bit long-winded. And I don't know if my New York accent is getting through fully for everybody, but you guys have been cool and awesome. And just for that, as Gilbert would say, Mishnahimi. That's my prayer to you guys. Thank you. Thank you. That's my blessing.
All right, guys. We hope you we tell take it to the moil. Anyway, we love you. Have a good one, guys. It's all we're the fish with the what do you call it, Meshuggah podcast, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Goodbye, my sweet loves.
What's happened to the jokes today?
What do you mean? You want a joke?
No, I'm used to being on this show with jokes.
Well, you want some jokes?
No.
The joke man?
If you're letting me out.
How big's your cock? How's that?
Well, that's a pretty good joke.
I don't know. You're too interesting to sit there and waste time with jokes.